Well, welcome to our segment two, and this is where we do our Bible study, as you just heard, with our Bible study teacher, Beth Seifert. Beth, thanks for joining us.
Hey, Amy. Well, yesterday we were seeing how David's men were sent back from battle, and they were sent back absolutely humiliated and disgraced, and so Joab went out to take care of business. And today we're going to skip around a little bit. We're going to start in 2 Samuel chapter 10. We're going to read verses 15 through 19, and then we're going to jump to chapter 12, verses 26 through 31. We'll go back to chapter 11 tomorrow, but for today, we're going to focus on the battle. So I want to finish the battle, and since chapter 1 kind of has an interruption of meanwhile back at the ranch kind of a thing, I want to go straight through the battle so that we can see all of the things that are happening chronologically, and then we'll see what was happening back elsewhere. So if you have your Bibles, go ahead and open to 2 Samuel. We'll start in chapter 10, verses 15 through 19. But when the Syrians saw that they had been defeated by Israel, they gathered themselves together, and Hadadezer sent and brought out the Syrians who were behind the Euphrates. They came to Helam, and Shobach, the commander of the army of Hadadezer, at their head. And when it was told David, he gathered all Israel together and crossed the Jordan and came to Helam. The Syrians arrayed themselves against David and fought with him. And the Syrians fled before Israel, and David killed of the Syrians the men of 700 chariots and 40,000 horsemen, and wounded Shobach, the commander of their army, so that he died there. And when all the kings who were servants of Hadadezer saw that they had been defeated by Israel, they made peace with Israel and became subjects to them. So the Syrians were afraid to save the Ammonites any more. Then chapter 12, verses 26 through 31. Now Joab fought against Rabbah of the Ammonites and took the royal city. And Joab sent messengers to David and said, I have fought against Rabbah. Moreover, I have taken the city of waters. Now then, gather the rest of the people together and encamp against the city and take it, lest I take the city and it be called by my name. So David gathered all the people together and went to Rabbah and fought against it and took it. And he took the crown of their king from his head. The weight of it was a talent of gold, and in it was precious stone, and it was placed on David's head. And he brought out the spoil of the city, a very great amount, and he brought out the people who were in it, and sent them to labor with saws and iron picks and iron axes, and made them toil at the brick kilns. And thus he did to all the cities of the Ammonites. Then David and all the people returned to Jerusalem. So the Syrians, the mercenaries, who ran from Joab and his strongest men yesterday, they've been licking their wounds and growing resentful of the beating that they received. And they also want a rematch to prove their courage, since they ran from the battle in yesterday's text. Well, they gather together, including more men, into a larger army. It may be that they thought that David would go after them directly for helping the Ammonites. Remember, just a couple of lessons ago, David trounced these guys and they pay tribute to him. It may also be that they just felt that they needed to prove they were men and go after David and his army. Whatever the case, they come together as a combined army. When David hears of this, he noticed that unlike yesterday, this time David doesn't just send his generals to deal with this. He's actually there himself. David gathers all the fighting men and he heads out to fight the Syrians. The Syrians are itching for a fight. Having been charged by Joab and their fighting men at the last time, this time they attack first, perhaps thinking that with the number of men that they had, they'd have an easy victory and Israel would run away just like they had the last time. They were wrong. After a terribly bloody battle with lots of casualties, including Shobach, the captain of their army, the Syrians flee from Israel again. So much for proving their mettle, eh? They decide that making peace with David was probably the better choice, as they keep losing men every time they come up against him. And they've also learned not to help the Ammonites anymore. In the meantime, Joab returns to the city of Ammon to besiege it this time. He didn't besiege it the first time, most likely because of the season that was coming up. He has to be able to provide for his men while holding off the Ammonites, right? So Joab fights the Ammonites and takes the royal city. Not the main portion of the city, but a set-apart portion. And then he sends messengers to David to tell him of his success. He asks David to send the rest of the soldiers to come to the city to force the entire surrender of the city. And here's an interesting bit. Joab either really loved working for David and wanted to make sure his king got the credit for the city, or Joab was chastising David for not being where he should have been, with them at battle. So David gathers the soldiers, he goes to Rabbah and takes the city, and places the Ammonites king's crown on his own head, showing himself to be the new authority in that land. David also brought the spoil out of the city, and at least part of that was to be used to build the temple. Okay, so battle is battle, right? You're probably thinking, this is interesting, Beth, but it's not earth-shattering. And I would agree to an extent with you. But in reading this whole thing, putting the whole war together, one thing that keeps coming back to me was, this was totally preventable. 40,000 plus men died because their king didn't accept the condolences of David. Instead of holding off on making any rash decisions, he assigned a motive to David that didn't exist. He acted with suspicion and in paranoia, and the king jumped ahead and ended up sacrificing lives and ultimately his own crown. Now, how often do we do that? Seriously, we are so concerned with protecting ourselves from harm that we don't lower our defenses to welcome even new friends. We're so hurt and wounded by the world that we attribute motives to people that may or may not be there. Now, I'm guilty of this, and I know that other women are too, so I'm going to call you on it today. When was the last time that you read an email from someone who maybe you have a strained relationship with, and as you read the email, in your head, you're giving every single word a tone. You know what I mean? They put into their email something that really and truly was probably a pretty innocuous phrase, but in your head you think, oh, well, they're just trying to dig at me about this with that phrase, and they're trying to tell me this with that, and you're reading between the lines. Can I just say, please, instead of reading those emails and those messages and assuming a tone that may or may not be there, have a second person look at it, preferably not another woman. I say that with all honesty because I know that when I share it with my girlfriend, I'm sharing it so I can gossip. But if I share something like that with my husband, he's going to take a step back and he's going to tell me, honey, I think that you're reading too much into this. I don't think that there is a hostile tone here, and I think maybe you need to think about it before you respond back. Instead of taking things at face value, and let me tell you, ladies, we're the worst at this. We analyze things to death to make sure we know exactly what the other person is saying or wanting to get out of the situation before we move forward. We can't even accept compliments without reading something negative into it. What does she mean she likes my hair? Doesn't she usually like my hair? What's wrong with my hair? Did my hair do something differently today? Really? Sometimes, yes, there will be strings attached, but guess what? You don't have to accept the strings. Did you know that? We need to stop assuming that everyone has an angle. Remember, a gift is something that is given with no expectation of reciprocation. And a compliment is in that category too. It's a gift of words. Just as God gave us the gift of His Son, He did so freely and without our earning the gift. He did it just because He loves us. So today, take a step back. Think about that relationship that came to your mind as I was talking today. And consider whether you're not adding to conflict because you are assuming a tone that may or may not be there. We need to have grace with each other. We need to show each other that grace.
Well, thank you, Beth. And Beth's study guides, as well as the 10-minute podcasts of these presentations, are all available in our archives under the Bible Studies tab of our website, naomistable.com. Nancy and I will be back with more on this in just a moment.